In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to One Track Mind with myself, your host, and your DJ, Christy Lomax. Tonight, I'm happy to have in studio LA's own singer-songwriter, Jametta Rose. She's here to talk about her independent release entitled The Barber's Daughter. But before we get into the interview, let's listen to a track from the album. We're going to get into Glorious. So, Jametta Rose, welcome to One Track Mind.
Hello.
How are you doing this evening?
I am wonderful. Thank you. Hey, everybody.
I tell you, February has definitely turned into that month where, you know, I've just had lots of good guests come in, got good music going on, and so I'm just happy to add you to the mix and get people hip and on top of your full-length release, The Barber's Daughter, came out when? January?
I had the release party in L.A. December 17th, okay. But it was released in January, yes.
All right. So the album is titled The Barber's Daughter.
Yes, that's me. That's who I am.
Which is obviously a nice tribute to your dad. Tell us a little bit about your father.
Wow. My dad was from Natchez, Mississippi, and he was born in 1924. So he was, you know, I was the last tribute, you know. But he came out here to L.A. and opened his own business. He bought property, at a time where it was hard to find employment for black men. My dad came out here, and he had the entrepreneurial spirit before it was like the hip thing to do now, you know? So definitely a blessing to have had him as a father.
Now, how big a role was music in his life?
Oh, he was a dancer, okay? And like my dad, his shop was on Central, so that was like the jazz center back in the 40s, and you know? Mm-hmm. And so he knew a lot of the jazz musicians that were popular at the time and cut their hair, hung out with him. And so jazz, I listened to Billy, Ella, all of that. He made me listen to 88.1 on the way to school all the time. And I thought I didn't like it, but it really influenced me.
He just never had any aspirations to sing or...
Oh, no, no. Actually, yeah, no, no.
Be the hyphenate dancer, singer.
Yeah, that would have been cool, but no. I'm like, nobody sang in the family, really. But no, my dad, he could hold a tune, mm-hmm. But he didn't.
And so what role did he play in terms of, you know, once you told him you wanted to be a singer, you know, what did he...
Well, you know, both of my parents are very and were very supportive throughout the years because I've been singing since before I could really talk. And when I started to try to pursue it professionally, I was about 13. And the first lesson was, you know, if you're going to do this, you got to do education, you got to do this because you need something to fall back on. Music is flaky. And I was just like, okay, yeah, I'm listening. But then as an adult, it started to get serious. And that same lesson came back, but with a lot of belief. And I'll never forget, my dad told me I was his hero. And I said, wow, that stuck with me. And it still sticks with me because it makes me know that, you know, no matter how hard this may seem, there's so many talented people, but nobody can do what the other person can do. You know, you can only be yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to be the best me I can be and just continue to be my dad's hero, but hopefully inspire someone else to believe in themselves.
And so what was your first professional gig as a singer?
I was in a band when I was 19 called Hoodie Smith, and we were a local band. We performed all over the place, and it was two MCs, Orbin Yah and Malachi and myself, so we were like the Fugees, but we had a band. And so it was really fun. We used to do the Temple Bar, and I remember I wasn't old enough to be there, and so they would make me wear this big bracelet, like this big plastic bracelet, and like I could only drink water bottles. And so I remember thinking, oh, this is cool. I'm singing in clubs.
And so the music for that band was a mixture of hip hop and soul, or did you have?
Definitely. Definitely. And that band is where I started to cultivate what became my actual style. Because before, I was just like a gospel singer. I came up in church and I sang a lot of gospel, but I listened to a lot of jazz. And so getting in the band allowed me to use my voice like I hadn't been able to at church, because it's different, the emotion that you use in the two genres. And so being able to blend the two, I found myself in that band.
Just talk a little bit more about that difference between the gospel, using your voice for gospel versus for soul.
Well, the intent is the difference. Okay. One is to praise, and I feel that my music is spiritual, and so I'm trying to walk this fine line that I feel is there and not make music only for the listening pleasure, but hopefully to make music that the melodies and the music speaks to the soul and in that way praises God. And so, you know, I'm trying to walk the fine line to make the intent erase the differences between the two types of music, because the intent is to offer a gift to the world and to praise God, because that's where I got my, you know, my talent from. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's what I hope to do, is to blend the two, to merge it. But when you sing in church, you sing, you know, you just let it all out. It's like the whole week. If, you know, you go every Sunday, you go, well, when I went, I was going more than Sunday, but you know,
right.
You go every Sunday and you just let it all out, and you remind yourself that you're okay. And like sometimes in soul music, you know, it's about the partying. Because it's okay. Like, you know, you move your hips, you start shaking, you know, tapping your foot, and then it's like, oh, I'm all right. And so at the end of the day, the two things are the same, but, you know, you just got to make sure God is a part of all you do.
And so what happened? How long were you in that band?
I was in that band for 3 years, and we had what it took. We had it, but it just wasn't time. And so people started going their separate ways. You know, the bass player went on tour with someone, then the keyboardist went. Then all of a sudden we didn't have a band. It's like, okay, well, yeah, okay, it's a wrap.
So you, at that point, were you thinking about trying to find maybe another band? Or you thought, okay, because of this experience, I'm going to go on my own?
Definitely. Oh, my gosh. I was so scared after that, because I said, well, you know, I kept feeling like, well, this is my baby, and I'm letting everything that I hope to achieve in life depend on so many other people. And it was really a vulnerable place to be. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to sing by myself. And through singing by myself, I just realized that I prefer to sing with bands live. Like, I don't, singing with a track live feels like stagnant. Like, you can't go anywhere, really. And so you know, I would say about 3 years, 2 years after that band broke up officially is when I started looking for my own band. And now I have a lovely band. I love my band. Oh, Raymond, Reggie, Tolly. I'm like, let me say all of your names. I'm
trying to get those shout outs in
Sylvia,
early.
Sylvia, Felicia. No, but yeah, no, they're a great group of people. And they believe in me enough to play with me. And I believe in them enough, you know, and like it's a trust thing. It's really a family thing to me. And I try to make that clear to them because I value them so much because I've had the experience of losing a whole band. And yeah, I'm excited. I love my band.
Now, before you found your new band, mm-hmm. did you, with the old band, you never got the chance to record a record or have a record released or?
No, you know what? We were so bootleg. Okay. So, well, you know, not bootleg, but very, very determined to get the music out. And so we had CDs that we sold at our shows that we hand painted each CD. It was really like indie. It was really, really indie. And so we never released major, you know. And so the process of releasing my album myself has been very arduous because it was a learning lesson every step of the way. I mean, I ran into the wall every step of the way, like, boom, oop, did that wrong. Okay, I'm sorry. All right. Well, let's do it this way now, you know.
So what was your actual first, you know, physical recorded record?
America.
It was America.
America with Georgia. Yes, okay. My sister.
And how did that collaboration come about?
You know, I met Georgia outside of the Little Temple. Okay, so they used to have sketchbook at the Little Temple, and I was hanging with my brother DeVue, and we were outside of sketchbook, and Diabolik was playing his beats on his, you know, boombox. That's Diabolik. Everybody knows. And I didn't even know who Georgia was at the time. I had heard her music, but I didn't know her upon sight. And so she was the only other chick in the circle, and we out in the circle, and I just started singing my song. I'm singing. At first, I was freestyling, and then I just went into this song that I wrote to Diabolik's track. And afterwards, she was like, sis, you were holding that down. We need to work. I'm Georgia. You know, she introduces herself, and I'm tripping like, wow, okay. And we've just been friends ever since, and the music. We immediately went into the studio, and Dudley was like, y'all got to record. So that's what we did, and America was the product.
And that was what year?
2007.
So what was that experience like? It's like being in the studio and working with Georgia, who's just sick with the beats.
Yeah.
And, you know, her music is, you know,
at the
deep.
Time, you know, it's so crazy because we had very like minds as far as like the writing, the words, like the words that we put into the song and the thoughts that we think. And I just remember we just would talk all the time and make cake and we'd be eating cake and just making songs. And so like now I look back and I'm like, wow, that was really this awesome period in my life. But at the moment it was just living. I was just living like, okay, girl, I'm coming over.
And America was the fruit of that collaboration. Let's take a listen to America, the version that appears on Jametta's album, The Barber's Daughter. It's One Track Mind with my special guest, Jametta Rose, right here on 90.7 FM, KPFK.
Remember this. Let me express myself. Oh, I'm in. Nothing in this world is free. Yeah. Not you, not me. Even air has its price. 'Cause breathe the air everybody says la 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 la.
The song is called America. It's actually America Revisited on Jametta Rose's album, The Barber's Daughter, originally released in 2007 on an EP. So I'm curious. This is America Revisited, and honestly, I hadn't heard the first version.
Okay.
So I was just curious what changes were made, if any. Like, this is called America Revisited.
Oh, I had to add the bridge. I had to add the bridge on this song. And I just wanted to approach it as an older person and, like, see if the emotion would be different. And I think that it's a little different. But the bridge says, you know, all around the world, we are the conquerors. All around the world, we are the murderers. You know, we're robbing and we're pillaging villages, taking the people as savages. All for the black gold, I mean the black oil, I mean the black soul. And it's like, I had to add that to the song because I felt like initially I had the concept, but I didn't follow all the way through with it almost. It's like, I said all this like, America, how could you do this to me? But it's like, in the verses I was saying very, I don't know, very widely. It was a very wide thought, and I wanted to focus it on what I was talking about, which is, you know, the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
America's just not only the Middle East, you know,
Africa.
It's, yeah, mm-hmm. All over the world, we're doing all this damage, and we just sitting here like, oh, Big
right.
Daddy America, you know,
and
to be an American and to feel like, you know, you are collectively involved. We are collectively, as a collective, we are America. And so to say that, you know, hey, as an individual, I'm not with that. I'm not rolling with that, you know. And so I had to say specifically what I meant.
Gotcha. And so your first record made in 2007, when you brought, just describe the moment when you brought that record to your dad.
Him, wow.
You being his hero. What was that?
Well, you know, when I got the, you know what is funny? I got my first copy of this from Aloe Black. He was in, he was overseas, and he calls me like, Jametta, you know, you got, he's like, you know, you got a record out here, right? And I'm like, no, it's released already, you know, and apparently it got released out there first. And so he brought it back to me. And so my first one was like an import, right? So I bring it in and I'm like, Dad, my friend bought me a record back from, you know, and he's like, well, who is it? And I'm like, Daddy, that's me. You know, like, you don't recognize me. And he said, well, you know, that picture's dark. Is that you? You know, and he was joking and he said, oh, Momo, this is great. Now, who going to play this? He wanted to know who was going to play a record, because he said, everybody listen to tapes. Don't they listen to them diskettes? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, CDs, Daddy, CDs. And he's like, oh, well, who's going to play this? I'm like, somebody's going to play it. You know, people listen to records still, Dad. And he's like, oh, okay, well, good for you, Momo. And so that's about the extent of his reception. But I know that, you know, being an older person and not understanding, like, hip-hop and soul and people that do still listen to vinyl and, you know, the European market and, you know, not understanding all that and how the internet makes the world small, my dad was just kind of like, well, that's nice, baby girl, but where's that going, you know, where you going with that? So I know that he was proud of me, but his reaction was like, okay.
Well, that's funny how even back then, seeing vinyl through him as much as the younger generation, like with my nieces and, you know, younger people. Vinyl, wow. People still play that?
Exactly. You know?
So this is recorded, and now you have The Barber's Daughter. When do you know when you're ready to record a full-length album as opposed to, let's say, maybe another EP or just a single or two? When did you know you were ready to bust out with, you know, 13 tracks?
I knew when I realized that if I didn't, I wasn't. And, like, you know, you can psych yourself out as an artist. Like, oh, you know, this isn't how I want it to sound, or it has to be perfect. The first one has to be perfect. I better not see one. You know, you do that to yourself internally, and it'll stop you from ever doing anything. I have been recording forever, and it took this long for me to just say, well, Jametta, just go in here and sing, and somebody gonna feel it. And if not, you did it. You know, like, you did it, and it's yours. And it's something that one day you can show your kids. And, like, my friends, they know, like, at my album release party, my friends are, they like, you don't understand, this is the biggest moment. And I was like, girl, if this ain't the biggest moment, this is definitely gonna be something we can laugh about when we 52. And they like, shut up, Jametta, you know. But I really look at it like that. I'm not worried about the acceptance. I hope that people receive it, you know, but this is between me and God. That's how I look at it. Like, okay, we doing this. So
it's for you.
Yeah. I had to stop procrastinating. I would have never did it.
And so what, so then the first steps, how did you, you know, was a particular song already composed, or what did you have to find the producers for? Like, what's the process?
Okay. Well, my band and I have been performing. We have been performing these songs around town for about a year to a year and a half before this album release. And other songs like Constellations and Sweet Necessity were produced by local LA producers. Sweet Necessity is produced by Jay Business in Bombay. Jay Business is a personal friend of mine. And Constellations is produced by Reverb. And I had these songs that I had recorded in the process of, quote unquote, recording this other album that just never... I psyched myself out of it, right? But those songs were the two that I was like, oh, I can't leave these. And so I had to add them to the ones that I was currently performing with my band. And as far as finding the other producers, like Glorious is produced by Raymond Rios, which is my drummer in my band. And Drifting Far Away on the album is produced by Reggie, Reggie Johnson. Reggie Johnson. He's my keyboardist. And so it was really... a very homegrown thing. And the executive producer is Luke Cage. And I was introduced to him by my former drummer. And so it was really just, everything was just lining up at the right time.
The way it's supposed to be.
Definitely.
Now, you added Sweet Necessity and Constellations. Mm-hmm. The songs that you'd been, I mean, the rest of the songs that are on here, you say you were performing them live. Were these, obviously you had a fuller repertoire of stuff, but so were these the most popular, they got the biggest response, and that's how you added them, or was more a concept?
It was more like timing, like the timing of when the music came out of me. And so the songs that came out around the same time, I grouped together, and it was some songs that came out, like On My Own. I wrote that a long time ago, but I couldn't not let On My Own breathe. And that's what I say, like, you know, because if I had kept it to myself and it was just the song I wrote outside of American Apparel when I used to work there, then that wasn't fair to On My Own, because I think that song really evoked how I felt at that moment.
On my own. Now, I noticed a nice thread between Life Unfolds, Sweet Necessity, and Revolution Out There, sort of an arc of, you know, a relationship, you know, the goodness of sort of being in love, meeting someone, sort of that belief that you actually found love, and then sort of how you take that love between your personal relationship and push that out into the community to do something more. Were those, what was the time frame between sort of when those songs came together? Because sequentially on the album, it seems like a really, you know.
Oh yeah, I definitely planned it like that. Even when I perform live, I try to tell a story. And so like, those songs were written around the same time roughly, but sometimes they didn't come necessarily in order, you know, because for some of them, I wasn't even experiencing those things at the time. But for some, I was definitely experiencing the thing, and I'm all wrapped up in love, and I'm like, kiss me, you know. I'm like, please kiss me, whatever. And so definitely just arranging them afterwards, because they weren't in order. They didn't come in order.
Okay, well, let's take a break and listen to Sweet Necessity from Jametta Rose's latest release entitled The Barber's Daughter.
I like simple things, like spending time. Then when the day's done, pressing rewind, 24 hours could never be enough.
One Track Mind, in case you just tuned in. I'm Christy Lomax, your host and your DJ. And my special guest this evening is LA singer-songwriter Jametta Rose. And she's here to talk about her debut full-length record, The Barber's Daughter. And she also has a show coming up this Sunday at Zanzibar, right?
That's correct. Zanzibar, Sunday the 28th. Show starts at 9, doors open at 9, show starts at 10, $5 all night. I go on about 10:45, and we have a show for you. So come on out there. We're going to tear it down.
Oh, shoot. Jametta in full effect.
We're going to have fun.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, or have you talk a little bit about, sort of the duality and the juxtaposition in the record. Because I thought it was sort of interesting, too, that you have, you're very sharp about framing all of these tales, stories of love against, you know, not just any kind of backdrop, you know.
Yeah.
You know, in some of the songs you're talking about, the
like
infiltration
political.
Of crack and in the community and in political involvement. So is that your sort of, I don't want to say your normal structure for a song? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would say that, you know, just to let y'all know, I am a bona fide revolutionary hippie all the way to the bone, right? And then I'm from the hood. Like, I'm from South Central. And so it's no way for me to be, you know, because they paint it like, you know, the statistics say that nobody makes it out of the hood, you know. And so for me to be, quote unquote, what's supposed to be the exception, I'm about to tell you, like, well, here's why. Like, you know, we're going to talk about why then. And I just think that it's no reason to sing if you don't have nothing to say. Like, if you don't have something to say... We're supposed to be, you know, we're supposed to be writing down history. That's what we're doing, you know,
right.
The history outside of the books, because we can't depend on the history books, obviously, right?
Right.
So I feel like music's responsibility and your responsibility as a musician is to tell the whole life of the thing. You know, music in the 70s didn't just talk about, oh, I want to rub you down. Now, of course, they said that because, hey, we still a thriving planet. So we know that people is rubbing each other down probably right now, you know. But is that all that I can sing about? Like, I'm not about to sit up here and sing, ooh, baby, give me one more chance every time you hear me. Because if that's the case, then you already have somebody doing that. And so I try to talk about the real, like the real life. And so real life is, you know, yeah, love does exist, but I got to pay my bills, or they just raise taxes, or hey, we got a black president, or whatever, you know. Talk about life and live it.
Right.
I wouldn't sing if I didn't have something to say. If I didn't have something to say, if I wasn't trying to tell you my stories and speak somebody else's story or whatever, I wouldn't sing.
In terms of your writing process, is that the thing that sort of stops a song from moving forward if you haven't figured out the backdrop or the political or social context to add to the song?
Oh, definitely. Or just, yeah, don't know why this came across my mind. I'm not about to sing about this, you know, and I'll just leave it alone because it'll be like, ah, that was funny. I'm not about to sing this on stage, you know?
Right.
This is not what I want to represent. And so definitely I think about my subject matter, and it's just, I think a lot, actually. As much as I talk, I think, is that amazing or what? But no, I'm very talkative, but tons of things cross my mind. But I have something to say, and I have a way to say it that makes it palatable.
Talk to me a little bit about how you made black women, black girls, you know, with curves, being acceptable, you know.
Life unfolds.
Yeah, life unfolds. Talk to me about how, you know, because that's a subject that I found just over the last year. Lots of women that I've had the pleasure to speak with, whether it's Joy Jones, Yolanda, Yolanda Johnson. That is a subject that for us keeps... It's a, you know, regardless of how many albums you've put out, there's always that one, you know, that brown girl song.
Yeah, exactly,
you know,
exactly.
Being, you know, full figured, you know, natural hair, whatever the case may be, just being accepted, having yourself, your blackness accepted and lovable.
I think that you have to, you come to a point where you realize you got to love yourself, because the media, everything is telling black women you ain't nothing. You know, everything, everywhere you look, you can't see yourself. You know, you don't see yourself, or you see a version of you that is not natural. It's not just who you are. So it makes you feel like your natural self is somehow less than. And so
not valued,
you know, and so you gotta like scream it out to the hills, because you gotta convince yourself first, and then you start convincing the world. And so when I wrote Life Unfolds, I was imagining this like perfect love. I was imagining just this totally, he loves me. Ain't it crazy? Like, he loved me, y'all. And, like, I love me, too. But, like, he loves me with all of this stuff that's telling him he shouldn't. You know, it's so many things. I mean, look at the TV. Look at the magazine. Probably close your eyes. You'll see an image of somebody that ain't you, you know? And so, just, I wrote the song from the place. I just put myself in the feeling of, I got this already. So I'm with this person. So I wrote the song as if that relationship existed because I needed to affirm myself. He loves me. Nappy hair, wide hips. Just me. Just me.
See, this here, back here. We gonna do this, I can tell. We gonna do this.
Life Unfolds, Jametta Rose, The Barber's Daughter is the name of the album. Where is this available for folks who now have, you know, every reason to run out and pick it up? They're just moved and compelled.
It is available at Amoeba in Hollywood, Fat Beats on Melrose, Midnight Records in Culver City on Robertson, Pooba Records in Pasadena, Dusty Grooves Records in Detroit. In Chicago.
And what about your website?
My website, Jametta Rose, J-I-M-E-T-T-A Rose.bandcamp.com. That's B-A-N-D-C-A-M-P.com. And also out the trunk of my car, because, you know, I keep the phone.
You keep it real like that. And once again, Jametta will be performing this Sunday, February 28th, taking February out with a bang at Zanzibar. Her and her full band.
Yes, my band, The Beautiful Thing. That's their name.
That's the name of the band, The Beautiful Thing?
The Beautiful Thing.
Well, this is, you know, this is great. I'm really happy to actually have had the opportunity to talk to you about this record and just get to know you a little better. You know, there's LA is just on fire right now.
It's a renaissance.
There is so much.
It really is.
So much going on. I mean, as a native Angeleno.
Angeleno!
You've seen great changes in this sort of underground scene. You know, throughout
even in
the
just
years,
the past year, a few years.
That's what I was thinking. You know, like even 2 years ago, it
totally
wasn't this
different.
Pop in LA for, you know, future soul music. I mean, LA is just
the place to be.
The place to be right now.
Yeah, I think that just definitely the fact that in the past, like 3 years ago, it was just the thing for indie artists to just go straight overseas, and it still kind of is. But the difference is that the internet. Like Twitter and Facebook and MySpace. Well, MySpace kind of like ghost town now, but you know, Twitter and Facebook, people are able to reach across oceans and it's like nothing. And so now, you know, you might not necessarily have been to Europe yet, but your music is all over the place. And so people can't ignore you now. So it was a lot of good music, as I'm sure it was in other places, that has been there. But now it's like you're not limited to the local listeners or, you know, the word of mouth from a friend telling a friend that, oh, this girl can sing. Now it's like, well, somebody might just click on your name on accident or see that you know someone else that they like. And, you know, they'll go and do it in like Pandora and Last FM. Those things are like changing the music industry, period. People just listen to that in their car. I love Pandora.
Yeah.
Pandora, just whatever I'm doing, I could pick whatever I want to listen to. And I was amazed when somebody told me I was on there. I was like, oh gosh, who put me on there?
A fan.
If you know who put me on Pandora, send me a Facebook because
she wants to know.
I want to know.
Well, Jametta, it was definitely, definitely a pleasure having you come in here this evening and sit down.
I had so much fun.
And
I was nervous
about this
too.
Record. Oh, you did great.
Hey.
You made me nervous.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, not a problem. You know, your music always has a home here at KPFK. And anytime, you know, you want to stop on by or hit us with some new tunes. As a matter of fact, let's go out with this is something that you're working on, right?
Yes, this is. Okay, I said I told people on the internet that I was going to do a little sneak peek. And so I'm going to work on an EP with local LA producers. And so I recorded this today. For those of you that follow me on Twitter, you know. And this song doesn't even have a name yet. It's going to be on the EP. The EP is going to be called Above the Clouds. And it's going to be with my LA hip hop producers because that's where I came from, you know. I'm a soul hip hop. That's me. So, Aero, this is for you.
Jametta Rose, ladies and gentlemen.
Peace out, y'all.
Same way. Do you're thinking about me, boy. If I could, I'd give you the stars. So tell me you're feeling the same way. I know you are. I'm tripping, head up in the clouds. And the stars are wondering why.
90.7 FM KPFK. Forthcoming music from my very special guest, Jametta Rose. Again, her full-length album that's out right now in stores is called The Barber's Daughter. You can get it locally, online. It's out there. So do yourself a favor and pick it up. We are going to just take a bit of a pause for the cause, and then we're going to come back and get that house music going for the rest of the hour right here on 90.7 FM KPFK.